No, you shouldn't be allowed to fix your own phone. Right to repair is a dumb idea. All right, what kind of clickbait title is this? I mean, seriously, nobody really believes that, right? Nobody thinks that anyone should tell you that you should not be able to fix your own phone, do they? I mean, I'm assuming that this was designed to get attention, because otherwise, I mean, seriously, what kind of communist are you if you're trying to tell people that they shouldn't be allowed to fix their own phones? Get real, dude. Hey, it's Mike from GoCellPhoneRepair.com, and this is the PhoneCast for Friday, February 17th, and today I'm going to be talking about some things that happened in the world of wireless during this week, and I wanted to just mention this. I don't want to go into great detail about it today because this has more to do with phone repair specifically, which is what I typically talk about on Mondays, but I did want to mention this because I saw this headline and reacted in a way that was probably anticipated by the person that wrote the article. And long story short, this is a Mashable thing. And I actually tweeted this yesterday. So if you want the link, I'll also include it in the description of today's podcast. But there's a guy at Mashable by the name of Lance Ulanoff. And he goes on to explain why he thinks that the right to repair movement, which if you're not familiar with, there are several states currently that are basically trying to pass legislation or promote legislation that would allow customers, repair shops, pretty much anyone to get replacement parts and even schematics and plans and so forth, information regarding repairs about devices from various manufacturers. Now, this includes more than just electronics. This actually has to do with farm equipment. You know, we have farmers that have tractors that they can't fix themselves. They have to go to the manufacturer to get information or to get parts or to get service on these things. And it's ridiculous that you should be forced to go to a specific place of origin and say, okay, you know, let me give you an example. And this is the analogy that most people draw. If you have an automobile that you purchased from the Ford Motor Company, should you have to go to a Ford dealership or a Ford service center to have repairs performed? Or would it be more in line with the philosophy that we have in this country that we promote other businesses and we promote the idea that people should be able to offer a service that's valuable instead of tight controls over where you're allowed to take your vehicle? Do you have to go straight to the Ford company, or can you go to a third-party mechanic and have him fix your car? I think that anyone with a reasonable amount of logic would agree that even if you don't plan on performing your own repairs, you should absolutely have the option of working on your own vehicle, your own phone, your computer. I mean, again, I can only come to the conclusion that the person who wrote this was hoping to get a reaction. And yes, I'm going to give you a reaction. This is a ridiculous title. At the very least, putting something, and this is on Mashable, which, you know, for the most part, I was a fan of Mashable. Like, I enjoy a lot of their articles, but to have a title that says, no, you shouldn't be allowed to fix your own phone. Okay, obviously you're looking for a reaction. So I'll go into this article more on Monday, because again, this has less to do with specifically consumers, although it does affect everyone, really. I mean, you should be able to take your phone in for repair anywhere you want to. If you want to tell me that the manufacturer can void your warranty because you took it to a non-authorized repair center, I'm fine with that. I mean, that's absolutely cool. But what you do with your own possessions, there definitely shouldn't be any sort of law that prevents you from being able to work on your own phone or have someone else work on it for you. And if you read the, like I said, I don't want to go too deep into this article today. I want to save that for money. But if you go through this article, you just pick it apart and see that a lot of this makes little to no sense. And it's very obvious that the author doesn't know much about the repair industry and is drawing a lot of ridiculous conclusions about this whole topic. It's just insane. And really, I wanted to actually give myself a couple days to just kind of cool off, because again, knee-jerk reactions typically aren't going to be of much value to anyone. So I really want to think this through, do some research, find out where this guy's coming from, and try to make some sense of it all. But on the surface, it just looks ridiculous. It looks like someone trying to get you to click on their article, and it worked, so I checked it out. Whatever. There's another one that I came across today, and it is called Five Reasons You Need Cell Phone Insurance Now. So I had to take a look at this because this is something that comes up a lot, not only from customers, different places that I've worked, but you know, people that I know ask me about how valuable it's going to be to insure or have get some sort of protection plan for your phone in case you break it. And the bottom line of this, to this is always the same thing. It falls into the same category as just about any other type of insurance. If you think about it, having insurance on your vehicle, having insurance for your health, having insurance for a number of different things. One of the reasons that people have insurance is because they are required to. Now, obviously, there are some good reasons, good arguments for having insurance. I mean, you want to be able to protect yourself against something that could bankrupt you and put you into debt for the rest of your life should you not be prepared to pay for those hospital bills or for the damage that your car caused when you're in an automobile accident. But beyond that, it is always worth at least considering the fact that insurance companies operate to generate profit. So they do not lose money. So what that means is that obviously more money is going to the insurance company than is getting paid out. So what we're doing in essence is gambling or protecting ourselves in the event of a loss. And I'm putting money into a fund every month and I am going to end up with a net loss in value or a net loss in my own worth, assuming that I never get paid out on that investment. So every month I pay a monthly premium for my car insurance. And unless I'm in an accident, that money never comes back to me. It goes to someone else who files a claim against an insurance company. And I understand why we need to have that. And I understand how it works. But when we start talking about phones, there are a whole lot of other things that you really should consider before you take that step. And I just want to go through the 5 points that this article discusses so that people can think about this next time you consider getting phone insurance. So one of the things that they say is that despite the premiums and deductibles, insurance, and there's a big difference between insurance and protection plans. It varies by state, but for the most part where I'm at, only people who are licensed to sell insurance can call their plans, insurance plans. If you have a protection plan, that is a different category. So what they're saying is basically that 70% of the claims for insurance are filed within the first year, meaning that despite the premiums and deductibles, if your phone is valued at, let's say, $650, they're making an example with the iPhone 7, then you're still going to save somewhere between $320, $350. So in that case, it would make sense. And again, assuming that you're filing the claim within the first year. Now, of course, if you're not filing a claim at all, you're only out your deductible. And I'm sure that there are some exceptions and some fine print there that you want to read on that. But for the most part, yes, if you are going to have your phone completely destroyed to the point where repair is not an option and it will have to be replaced by the insurance company, then yes, you are going to be ending up in a position where you saved money over having to replace the phone with out-of-pocket cash. Now, the second point that they make states that most aftermarket protection plans, with quotes, are extended warranty plans which only cover accidental damage and malfunctions. And in my experience, that is not true. That is, at least it's not true for everyone. I can think of one company that I worked for specifically that did offer a protection plan and it covered anything. And what they go on to state here is that it will not cover loss, theft, and damage. And again, in the case of the company that I was dealing with, that is absolutely untrue. The protection plan that they offered covered everything. Loss, damage, theft, you name it, anything goes wrong with your phone, and they will replace it for you or repair it. So on point number two, I would say that when it says protection plans are not as good as insurance, make sure that you read the fine print on both of those because, again, this is a very broad generalization here. I mean, every company is going to vary when it comes to their terms and conditions. So make sure that you know exactly what you're getting into. The third point that they state is that most phone insurance programs offered through wireless carriers, which is what they're kind of promoting here in this article, include cracked screen repair for smartphones at a lower deductible than what you would pay for a replacement device. And that may be true, but I would also say make sure that you do your research here. And number two, keep in mind this, when it comes to any type of protection that you have for your phone, if you're talking about theft or loss, in most cases, they are going to ask you to file a police report. that states that the device has been stolen, if that's what the situation was. And also, they're going to require that you contact the carrier, or they will contact the carrier for you and make sure that the serial number for your phone has been entered into a database so that it cannot be used again. So I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, but it's definitely something that you should consider. If you lose your phone and you make an insurance claim or a protection plan claim and you get a replacement phone, if you should recover your phone later on, you will not be able to use that phone. And to anyone who says, how can I get that serial number, taking off this negative database, taking off this blacklist so that it can be used again, all I can say is good luck. I don't know anyone who's able to do that. And it makes sense, obviously, because this will prevent fraud in many cases from being committed by people who have these protection or insurance plans. But if you legitimately found your old phone, even before you've received your replacement, once that serial number gets blacklisted, as they call it, I do not know of any way to remove the phone from that database. So even if you wanted to return the replacement phone and keep your old one, chances are that is not going to happen. Now, the fourth point that they make here is that people who buy phones have to pay for them upfront or make monthly installments. And if you remember a few years ago, you could basically sign up for anything from a free phone to the top of the line phone that was offered at a pretty significant discount. And this was a bundling that started happening back in the 90s. And what it said is basically that the carrier could give you a phone, you had to pay the sales tax, and nobody ever understood why that was. But the bottom line is that they don't want to pay it for you. And I'm not sure that they actually could. But if you are on an installment plan or you've paid cash for your phone, you're going to be out that money if you should lose or have your phone stolen and you don't have some sort of coverage. And it's really probably the most painful, I think, when you're on an installment plan, because if your phone disappears and you've got to replace it and buy another one, but still continue to make payments on the one that you got beforehand, that really sucks. You know, to have to pay out of pocket or to finance a second phone while you're still financing another one that you can't even use. Yes, I agree 100% on this. That would be one thing that might encourage you to consider a protection or an insurance plan for your device. Now, for the last point here, they say that most cell phone insurance programs provide a replacement device the next day. I am sure that is going to vary from one carrier and one location to another, but if that is the case, it is definitely going to be a convenience for the customer. Although my question would be, how are they going to deal with something like let's say an iPhone 8 when it comes out? And as we all know, what happens typically is they run out of stock immediately and everyone's on a waiting list and people are lining up in front of the store to be the first one to get the phone. Well, when you don't have the exact same model in the same color with the same amount of storage, how are these guys going to get you a replacement device the next day that is exactly the same as your phone? And regardless of whether you're talking about a protection plan or an insurance plan, I don't think that that is always going to be possible. Are you getting sick because of your cell phone? Ugh. Okay, so this is kind of gross, but I had to read this because, well, I guess because mainly, for a long time I've wondered what people do in the bathroom with their cell phones. Because working in the repair industry, what we see a lot of are people bringing in phones with liquid damage because they fell into the toilet. I guess we could think of it as, you know, a long time ago, people used to take the newspaper or a magazine into the bathroom. And now it appears that 2/3 of the population takes their phone to the restroom with them for entertainment, I guess, as they're passing the time. And, you know, to each his own. To me, it just seems kind of weird. I really just want to get in and out as soon as possible. But if you want to take your phone to the bathroom with you, keep this in mind, especially if you're in a public bathroom. And obviously, even if you're at home and you share the restroom with other people, everything that you handle while you're in the restroom, just before you leave, you will typically, I hope, wash your hands before you walk out. So anything that you've come into contact with in the restroom is going to be cleaned off of your hands for the most part. The problem is that if you're using a cell phone while you're using the restroom, you're going to be touching everything inside the restroom that you would normally come into contact with, and then your phone. And when you get finished, are you going to wash your phone off too? Probably not. So unless you're disinfecting your phone somehow, Everything that your hands come into contact with inside of the bathroom are going to come into contact with your phone, and then you're going to probably put that up to your face later on and make a phone call. So all I can say is, not for me, I guess it's entirely up to everyone else as far as what they want to do, but phones in the bathroom, yep, not my thing. Gadget Hacks has an article where they talk about the four most durable premium smartphones for clumsy people. So if you're one of the people that likes to drop, well, you don't like to drop it, right? What are we talking about here? You drop your phone more than average, then you probably want to make this a consideration when you decide what to purchase. Now, I have a feeling that this will not sway most people. In my experience, people will purchase a phone based on the features that they're looking for. And whether or not it's breakable doesn't seem to be a huge factor. Although all of us will complain about it when we drop it the first time and it shatters, but that will usually not discourage anyone from purchasing that type of phone. So if you're an iPhone customer, you will probably buy another iPhone. If you're an Android customer, you will probably buy another Samsung or something along those lines. And that typically is the way it works. So I just want to cut through this real quick. And the four models that they looked at ended up being the OnePlus 3T, the iPhone 7, the Google Pixel, and the LG V20. Samsung, interestingly enough, missing from this list completely, but not entirely a surprise because those screens do break easy enough. Now, I am kind of surprised that the iPhone 7 is on here because traditionally, and even now, we do see that these phones shatter when they break, but more than likely we see more of them because there is so many more out there. There are so many more on the market that can be broken. And with the OnePlus 3T, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of people using that phone. So, it's questionable as to where these stats came from. But one thing is interesting about the article, and that is they also list the prices for these. So with the OnePlus 3T at $439, iPhone 7 and Google Pixel both at $649, and the LG V20 at $789. My first thought would be that this is a very difficult comparison to make when it comes to durability because the price points vary so much. I mean, really, if you want a durable phone, buy something like a Galaxy S Active or buy a Caterpillar Android phone or buy something that's not really going to break. So I think what this article probably should say is the four most durable premium smartphones that are common and you're likely to see people using for clumsy people or something along those lines. In any case, what they come up with is for the price point, it looks like the OnePlus 3T is, at least in Gadget Hack's opinion, the recommendation for someone who's clumsy. Now, of course, that is going to be a tough sell for someone who uses iPhones, because if you're on iOS, you're not going to switch over to Android unless you have a good reason to. So very interesting. Also, when we come down to the water resistance, they've got no rating for the OnePlus 3T, and of course the iPhone 7 with the highest of the four at an IP67, Google Pixel with an IP53, so slightly lower than the iPhone 7, and no rating at all for the LG V20. So I'm assuming if you've got the V20 or the OnePlus 3T, don't get those wet, you're going to have a problem. And last but not least, of course, they have a drop test, which I always question because there is so much luck involved in the drop test. I've got an idea as to how I might conduct a drop test in the future that would be more realistic, because obviously when you drop your phone, it may not land the same way the phone in the drop test did. So there's really going to be a hard time making a comparison there. There's a certain amount of luck of the draw there. But for the drop test, their results were that the OnePlus 3T has a good rating, whatever that means. The iPhone 7, good. LG V20, good. But the Google Pixel ends up with a poor rating when drop tested from chest height. So something to consider if you are one of those people who fumbles their phone quite a lot and ends up dropping it. For water immersion, they don't have a lot of specifics, at least at the chart that I'm looking at, but the OnePlus 3T passes a water immersion test, which I would imagine is at a very shallow depth for 1 minute. And with the iPhone 7, we have speaker damage. With the Google Pixel, we have a foggy camera, so it looks like some water got into the camera there. With the iPhone 7, got into the speaker. And with the V20 NA, which I assume means that they did not try to test it, which would make sense since there is no IP rating for the V20. Nokia to bring back historic 3310. Now, here's what you should consider if you want a durable phone. And if you don't remember this is the old candy bar style phone that Nokia released in year 2000. and you can practically use this thing for a hammer. It is one of the most durable phones ever. Well, supposedly, Nokia may be re-releasing a newer version of the 3310, which we assume would be just as durable as the old one and have many upgrades as far as the processing power and hardware goes, or software goes. But we'll wait to see if that is going to happen or not. Or, yeah, maybe Nokia just said this so they can get a little press, because they are supposed to be trying to make a comeback. At one time, they were actually the most popular brand for mobile phones in the world. That phone, the 3310, has sold more than 126 million units. And they lasted so long, you practically could never needed to throw them away because they just didn't break. The Wireless Expo is coming to San Francisco on September 12th, 13th, and 14th this year. I might actually attend this, and I have to say, if you're not familiar with it, this is going to be a specialty pavilion held on-site during the Mobile World Congress, America's 2017 in partnership with CTIA. Now, if this is anything like CTIA, it will unfortunately probably be a disappointment for anyone who has been in the repair industry for a long time. You can do some networking, take a look at a few products, but for the most part, what we saw was a lot of what we had already seen. So I would probably recommend this to someone who is new to the repair industry. If this is your first year or two, you will probably pick up some valuable information. But for the most part, probably won't be missing much if you've been involved in this business for any amount of time. Now, since I'm close to San Francisco, it would make sense for me to attend. I think I will more than likely show up, take a look at what it's all about, if it's any different than CTIA, and go from there. I will report back, obviously, and hopefully they'll let us bring cameras in and microphones. And then that way, I can do what I would like other people to do for the Mobile Congress that's going on now, or will be going on shortly, and that is allow me to see it without having to do the traveling, because I'm not close by. Anyways, Samsung reportedly signs deal with Apple to make 160 million OLED panels for iPhone 8. So it looks like, again, rumors, right? The iPhone 8 will most likely have an organic light-emitting diode display, which is awesome. These are good for a number of reasons, a couple of them being the display quality, truer colors when it comes to things like black, and of course the lower power consumption than LCD technology. So it's been a long time that Apple has been talking about doing this. Of course, Samsung has had these on the market for several years. So it's really surprising to me that Apple stuck with the LCD technology for so long, but it looks like they will finally be switching on at least one of their phones, with two other versions coming out that will still be using LCD technology. So the talk is that the iPhone 8 will be OLED, and we will also have two other versions, more like the iPhone 7, with upgraded internal components and possibly, finally, wireless charging. So we'll find out sometime, more than likely in September, if not sooner. Pigeon caught smuggling cell phone into jail. Now, there's not a lot about this article, but this apparently took place in Brazil, where guards noticed that some inmates were trying to catch a pigeon. So they ended up getting the pigeon themselves and found a small pouch that contained a cell phone and a battery. So this happened before, it seems like. Yeah, it was in Colombia last year. There was a similar incident where a pigeon was caught with a phone attached to its back. So that is how you smuggle phones into prisons, apparently. Just attach them to a homing pigeon. I have so many questions on this one. Like, do you just train pigeons? Do they allow the prisoners to work with pigeons, and then they learn to fly out and come back in like the old messenger back in, you know, medieval times when they used pigeons or whatever it was for carrying messages? I don't know. This is just really weird. Now, here's something interesting. I've been talking about the dangers of texting and driving for quite a while, and there's an article. There are several articles actually this week regarding the dangers and possible legislation for texting and or using your cell phone while driving. So the preliminary estimate for 2016 for highway fatalities is 40,200 deaths, and that is up 6% from the previous year. And obviously they're saying that people using their phones on the road has a lot to do with this. If I'm reading this correctly, the National Safety Council recommending that cell phone use, not just handheld devices, but cell phones altogether, be banned because research shows that it's the act of thinking about the conversation, not dialing or holding the phone, that causes driver distraction. And I have to agree with this. And at the same time, well, first of all, I want to say good luck, because getting people to stop using their phones in their cars is going to require a penalty severe enough that anyone takes it seriously, first of all. At this point in time, at least where I'm at, texting and driving is punishable by a fine, but it's not a fine that is significant enough to really stop people who have a problem with this from doing it. You know, if you have a DUI law that will get you jail time, a huge fine, a driver's license suspension, mandatory alcohol rehab class, that's something that people take very seriously. But if you get a slap on the wrist, a $20, $50, or $150 fine for texting and driving or talking on the phone while driving, I don't understand how that's going to have much of an impact on people's behavior. It's really sad to say, but most of the people that I see doing this, and most of the people at least that I've talked to, are trying to avoid being caught rather than not participating in the activity anymore. So I think it's going to take something a lot more serious than that. On top of this, the sad thing is that while I do agree, and I think most people would agree, that it's not just operating the phone that causes people to be distracted from paying attention to the road. The mental process that's going on behind the conversation has an effect on how much attention is being paid to the process of driving. But these conversations can take place just as easily with someone in the car as they would with someone over the phone. So what do we do next? You know, are we going to ban conversations while people are driving? Highly unlikely. So again, while I agree that something needs to be done to prevent people from causing accidents because they're distracted, there's a big question as to how we're going to make that happen. And I don't think insignificant, for the most part, fines are going to make that big of a difference. Maybe. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. Tennessee lawmakers, meanwhile, may ban cell phone use for drivers 17 and under. So what this article says, and this is on WKRN.com, pretty much that if you're under the age of 18 in Tennessee, they are looking at a ban that would prevent you from using your phone in any capacity, including hands-free, Bluetooth, or anything like that while you're driving your car. So if you're over 18, you would be able to use Bluetooth or car speakers to make a call while driving. Other than that, if you're under the age of 18, no cell phone use, period, until you stop the car or park it. So we will see how that turns out. And again, my same concern here is that if enforcement means that you're going to get a $50 ticket on your first offense, I have a feeling that the impact is not going to be as significant as it needs to be. If you're going to stop someone from driving dangerously, there has to be consequences in many cases. And it's unfortunate that it usually takes an accident before a lot of people understand that, yes, it can happen to you. Anyways, just one more here, and I don't want to harp on the cell phone driving and texting thing, but there is a poll that asks whether or not cell phone use should be allowed on commercial flights. And this is a very short article, of course, because all they're doing is asking for people's opinion and probably trying to generate some traffic to their website. But on this one, I'm going to say good luck. You know, we recently just discovered that it is okay to use your phone on a plane, and it's not generally going to interfere with the navigation of the plane. Once it's in flight, you're still supposed to put it into airplane mode while you're taking off or landing. But at the same time, airlines are looking at eliminating screens from the plane, you know, the ones that they show you movies on, because so many people are using their phones and tablets while they're flying. So it wouldn't make a lot of sense. And on top of that, I mean, we know that having phones that can explode in planes are a bad thing, but so far that has been very rare, and we haven't had any actual planes catching on fire or crashing because of batteries that exploded. But I don't see this happening. You know, whether or not we think that it should, people not using their phones on their plane does not seem like anything that's going to happen in the near future. That's it for the PhoneCast for today. I will be back on Monday, and you can probably assume that most of Monday's podcast will be about the Right to Repair movement. This is very near and dear to me. This is what I do for a living. I work on phones, and I need to be able to continue to do that. And this is not the first time that something I have chosen as a profession has been threatened in some way by legislation or by lobbying groups and so forth. So I obviously my position on this issue is clear. I absolutely believe that people should be able to fix their phones, and maybe that's not for everybody, but we should at least have that option. Wouldn't you agree? Let's talk about it next Monday. I'll be back then. Thank you so much for coming by and taking a listen. Have an awesome weekend. I'll see you soon.